Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So like, you could just see 100,000,
600,000 deducted.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, "Hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, "Man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here." "Oh, man." He said, "This woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor." Every tax check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie, Dawson, said, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for two straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government. Plus, I had to pay my current taxes. I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up, because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling, because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven. The radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this, because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back.
All right, this morning, you know, as we're waiting for our board to reboot itself, we're talking about information deserts. Information desert, exactly. What is the information desert? And basing things on Hosea 4, chapter 4, 6. And in modern terms, information literacy. Matter of fact, let me go here. I might have to. I'm rearranging things here. Anyway, I call in number 46. Oh, excuse me, that's wrong number. 61. No, that's not it either. 619-768-2945 is our live stream call-in number. And let's see, am I plugged in here? Okay. We're just waiting for things just to, I guess, sink in. Okay, let's try this.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he can fix me, and change me and get me over here trying to do better. Now, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will. We'll be right back.
Adam Clayton Powell, for the first time, was defeated. Charles Rangel won in a very close election. Within a few years, Adam Clayton Powell would contract cancer and die.
If we must die, let us not die like hogs, penned in some inglorious spot. What use is an extra year or two to the man who kills the time that God has given him?
Much of the story of Adam Clayton Powell is on display here in this anteroom of the Abyssinia Baptist Church. But there are many parts of the Adam Powell story that you cannot see hanging up on the walls, mainly the ironies in his life. Isn't it ironic that Adam Powell was such a loud voice that few people would listen to? Perhaps if his loud voice had been heeded on the question of police corruption, there may not have been a Knapp Commission. If his loud voice about government corruption had been heeded, there may not have been a Watergate. If his loud voice against hypocrisy on Capitol Hill had been heeded, perhaps Wayne Hayes and Tom Dodd and Earl Butz and Carl Albert and countless others might have not have been caught in such embarrassing situations. Adam Clayton Powell represents still another chapter in the long story of black militant fighters against oppression and injustice here in America. He wasn't perfect. He had his faults, but don't we all? The point is, he was a fighter. If he did play, he worked harder than he played. Most of all, he was a fighter.
As I know here, you're in trouble. Where it says about 30% are unemployed. That's why I'm working hard to get this surplus food here. Some of you say to me, well, I'm not like you. I'm not a congressman. I haven't got education. I haven't got work. But you're a human being. And you know what you've got? You've got in your hand the power to use your vote and to use even those few cents you get from welfare to spend them only where you want to spend them. A young slave boy stood one day before the greatest ruler of his day. And God said to Moses, what's in your hand? And Moses said, Lord, only I've got a stick, that's all. He said, well, let me use what's in your hand. And God used that slave boy with a stick in his hand to divide the Red Seas, march through a wilderness, bring water out of rocks, manna from heaven, and bring his people to freedom land. What's in your hand? What's in your hand? George Washington Carver, who was so frail that he was traded for a broken-down horse as a slave boy. And George Washington Carver, sitting in the science laboratory at Tuskegee, told me, he said, Dr. Powell, he said, I just go out on the field each morning at 5 o'clock, and I let God guide me. And I bring back these little things and work them over my laboratory, and that man did more to revolutionize the agricultural science of peanuts and of cotton and sweet potato than any other human being in the field of agricultural science. What's in your hand? Just let God use you, that's all. What's in your hand? I've got a string in my hand, that's all, and I'm flying a kite. And way up in the heavens, lightning strikes it, and I, Benjamin Franklin, discover for the first time the possibilities of electricity with a string in my hand. What's in your hand? Little hunchback sitting in a Roman jail. I haven't got anything in my hand but an old quill pen, but God says, write what I tell you to write. Paul wrote, I have run my race with patience. I've finished my course. I've kept the faith. Henceforth has laid up for you. What's in your hand, little boy? All I've got is a slingshot. And the enemies of my people are great and big and more numerous than we are. Well, little David, go down to the brook and pick out a few stones and come on back and close your eyes if you want to, and pull back that slingshot and let it go. And David killed the biggest enemy, the leader of the giants, against his people, and his people became free, just letting God guide a stone in his hand. And a few years passed, and David is a king. And God says, what's in your hand? He said, I've got a harp in my hand. He said, well, David, play on your harp. And he played, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. Maketh me to lie down in green pastures. Leadeth me beside still waters. Yea, though I walk through the valley in the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil. What's in your hand? What's in your hand? Man hanging on a cross? I've got two nails in my hand. Father, I stretch my hand to thee. No other help I know. If thou withdraw thyself from me, whither shall I go? And that man, with two nails in his hand, split history in half, B.C. and A.D. And what's in your hand tonight, people of Cambridge? You've got God in your hand, and he'll let you win, because he's on your side and one with God, always in the majority. So walk with him, and talk with him, and work with him, and speak together, and fight together. And with God's hand in your hand, the victory will be accomplished here sooner than you dreamed, sooner than you hoped, sooner than you prayed for, sooner than you imagined. Good night, and God bless you.
This 19-year-old is making millions per year reselling sneakers. So I spent a couple days with him to learn exactly how he did it.
We're here right now at Hype Miami, one of the fastest growing sneaker stores in the city. And it's actually owned by these guys, Marcus and Yuri. How old are you guys?
I'm 19.
I'm 24.
And how much did this business generate last year?
So last year, my business personally generated about $4 million.
And I'm right under that at 3.5.
Yeah.
Is that all from this retail store?
No, so before this, we actually did bulk selling of these sneakers and clothing. So what we would do is we would sell to stores like this all across America, actually internationally as well.
And now you got one of the biggest stores in the city, so let's go check it out.
Do it.
So we're surrounded by thousands of dollars worth of shoes right now. When did you guys actually start selling shoes?
So we only merged actually recently. So I started around like 2017, about 5 years ago.
And I started around 2018.
Got you. And what was the beginning process like getting into the sneaker game?
So getting into the sneaker game was actually pretty, I would say, a long process before I got anywhere, right? I started pretty small. The only reason I got into just selling things online was actually my parents. They kind of told me that I needed to either get a job or do something with my summer. And they basically forced me to sell all the stuff around the house. You know, I realized that it wasn't really interesting for me to sell my parents' old stuff. I wanted to sell things that I actually enjoyed, and at that time it was sneakers. The way I mostly in the beginning started scaling my business was really through like social media, like Instagram. I would say the biggest turning point in my business would have been COVID. There was a ton of sales that I was able to take advantage of from websites, and also a ton of, you know, end consumers were shopping exclusively online. So that boosted a lot of the prices and the sales for all these sneakers.
Now, 2 years later, you guys are doing pretty insane volume, right? How many shoes would you say you're selling a year? Do you know that number?
Selling a year? I want to say last year, upwards of maybe 20,000 units last year, maybe something like that.
That's insane.
Just last year.
How do you actually acquire the shoes? A lot of people are going to see a room like this. Like, how are they getting the connections? How are they picking up all these shoes at a price? How do you do that part of the business?
So you obviously have to source the more exclusive stuff and more quantity from other sellers as well. I can put it on my Instagram story, I need this, and people will, you know, respond all the time with this product for sale. I would say even sourcing it from sneaker conventions. So sneaker conventions is a big thing. We want to do that more so now that we have a store, because we're able to source very specific things. So we're actually going to a sneaker event soon in San Francisco, SneakerCon Bay Area. So
you should come. Yeah, we'll tag along with you guys.
Yeah, let's do it.
I think we should actually give away a pair to one of the viewers so they could get started in their reselling journey. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a great idea. Let's do it.
Which one would be the best one for us to give away?
This one for sure.
What are those?
Panda Dunks. This is a classic shoe. Everyone needs a pair of these, but I think this would be great to help anyone get started.
How much do you think they can sell them for?
Probably around like 200, 250, something like that.
Easy. Well, look, if you guys want to join that giveaway, make sure to subscribe to the channel. Follow Hype Miami on Instagram. Follow my Instagram. Drop a comment down below. But for now, let's head to SneakerCon.
Do it.
We made it to SneakerCon. So what's the goal today? What are we looking for, and how much are we going to be spending?
Well, Hopefully my goal is to spend about 20, 30,000 between today and tomorrow. Looking for the best sellers right now for the store and wholesale.
Well, look, let's walk around and maybe talk about some of the things that people should be looking for if they're trying to get into retailing.
So we're in the trading pit right now. This is where I started about 5, 6 years ago. The best way to make money, you know, flipping sneakers real quick.
How much money do you think you need to get started in retailing today?
Honestly, with shoes being a low-ticket item, I would say $500 is a great start. You can buy one, maybe even a few pairs, and get yourself going. So the way these events kind of work is, back in the trading pit, it's more used, not as much variety. So the prices, you can be able to get some steals in there. Tables is when the prices become a little bit higher, but you can still negotiate with them if you're taking a decent amount of product.
Supreme Order Combat, 1.2.
And, of course, you got the people walking around.
Yeah. So a lot of times at these events, you don't really know the market value of everything off the top of your head. So you got to check apps like StockX and Go to check the market value.
What are you looking at there?
All right, I just noticed, for example, the Paisley Dunks. So if I'm looking at them on StockX, you know, on average, they're going for around 175 to 200, you know. So if I can purchase them in the 160 to 170 margin, it'd be good for me.
You want to go for it?
Let's try it out. How are you doing, boss? How much are you asking on the Paisley? 200? Okay, yeah, I'd probably be a little lower. Take them all. Probably like 160, 165. 180.
Always got to compare.
There's hundreds of shoes. It's hard to know the market, especially because it changes, too. All right, I mean, I'd be able to do best like 170 on the Paisleys, and I'd probably be at like 175 on the Valerians. Oh, yeah, let's do it. 175 on them.
First deal of the day. Bro, what the hell are those shoes up here? I've never seen those before. Those are crazy.
CPFS. What are those going for now? 2,000. Crazy. Most shoes like that are tough for beginners, I would say, because it's really hard to get a margin on those. So I recommend starting with stuff that moves quicker. I'd rather spend 2,000 on 10 pairs of shoes than 2,000 on one pair of shoes.
So how many pairs would you buy, and how much in total is that going to cost you?
So we just picked up 10 pairs at 175 each, so it's about 1,750.
Damn, you bought 10.
All right, let's get it.
Let's do it. So how long do you think it'll take you to move these?
All of these will probably sell within a month or two.
How much do you think you'll be able to sell each pair for in your shop?
So in our shop, we have a lot better margins, obviously. We'll probably put them anywhere from 250 to 300.
The table was empty only 15 minutes ago.
Got it.
Oh, so you spent thousands of dollars today so far, right? Most people come to these conferences, though, they don't have that type of money to spend. So if you were coming here with a couple hundred dollars, what's something that you would buy?
Oh, actually, this guy just came here and sold us a size 10, 350, easy. So
how much did those cost?
These were 300.
Got you.
So I would say it's a pretty good deal. And you want to see if we can sell it here?
Yeah, let's try to flip it.
All right, let's do it.
All right, let's see what we can do. All right, so to make this more interesting, you've got 10 minutes to get this off.
Yeah, you buy? Size 10. Onyx. 350? Yeah.
Yeah, we got a bunch of
them. What you at?
320.
330. 320? All right, that's it.
Sold already?
How far are we in?
In 1 minute.
Appreciate it. There we go.
This man just speed ran. Flipping shoes.
Yeah, why not? We bought them for 300, sold them for 320, so not a crazy margin, but like you said, it was in a minute, so
yeah.
Why not?
Literally, he's not lying, by the way. So from here, you would go back and you would try to find something else and just keep flipping your way up.
That's how, like I said, that's how I started, you know? You get that $20 profit, you have 320 to work with, buy another shoe for 300.
So after a couple hours, we got all these shoes right here. Break down some of the best pickups of the day and how much you're going to make from all these.
So I personally like this one right here, the Argan Dunks. Picked them up for about 130 a pair, but in general, all this was around $6,000 total, and if I were to put it in my store, I would sell it for around $9,000.
$3,000 profit in a couple hours. And you guys make money in a bunch of different ways. What's the biggest way that you guys make money at your business?
So I would say wholesale is definitely number one. Like, you know, we're going to make a couple thousand on this, but it's going to take a few months, you know, to sell all this, right? But in wholesale deals, we're able to buy a lot in bulk at once and flip it right away and make a big profit up front.
What's the biggest wholesale order that you guys have ever done?
Funny you ask, Max. We actually have one of the biggest we've ever done coming up this Monday. So I figured I'd invite you out. If you want to come, check it out, see how it's done.
Showing the behind the scenes.
Behind the scenes, yeah.
Okay, bet. Let's do it. I'll let you get back to shopping, and I'll see you out there.
We got almost 10,000 pieces of clothing. That'll be delivered here very shortly. Basically, just going to be unboxing it here at the Airbnb, sorting it by style, and then packing it for all our clients that we pre-sold it to.
And
yeah.
If you're open to sharing, how much did it cost you to buy this 10,000 units?
So it's I can't say the exact number, but it's definitely a couple hundred thousand, I can say that.
And we got to get it all done today?
Yes, sir. In this business, sometimes it's tough. I haven't even touched a single piece of the product, but I have to send most of the money up front. So this is one of a few wires that I'm going to be sending out. 150,000 sent, wired out.
how much did you just send?
That's not even all of it. That's like less than half of it. So
you're crazy, man.
Yeah, I haven't even, as you can see, we don't even have the product yet, so.
Package still not here, but we're getting prepped, right? Tell them about what we've been doing.
Yeah, we've been, for the past few hours, we've been hitting U-Haul, UPS, Home Depot. We got about 150 boxes. Yeah, they said the truck's on the way now, though, so I think we should be good to go.
Man, I'm excited. We've literally been waiting 6 hours, but the truck just got here, and now... of the business even work, like how could you, without saying too much, like how could you even get to the point where you're able to get these type of deals?
I think it definitely takes a lot of experience, I would say. I mean, no one's just, you know, entering some business and, you know, being able to do all this. Number one, the capital to even, you know, front the money up front, some of it at least, as well as the connections. You know, you got to have experience to make the connections to be able to meet the people that can offer you this kind of stuff, and the connections to meet the people that you can sell this kind of stuff to. It's one thing to get the offer and buy it, but it's another to actually sell it all.
Yeah, definitely. This is wild. We got about 5, 6, 7, 8 hours of work, it looks like.
Yeah. I mean, let's get it.
Let's get it
done.
It. Come on. It is 3 in the morning, and these guys are literally still out here getting that work in.
Someone's got to do it.
I'm going back to bed. I'm not built for this. Hey, so you pulled an all-nighter, but you got it done, right?
Got it all done.
Got all the boxes packed. Look, man, 5 years ago when you first got into this game, could you imagine seeing yourself doing literally multi-six-figure orders of merchandise and clothing? Like, is this something that you always saw?
Nah, definitely not. I mean, when I started, it was just, like, to fund my sneaker habit. I just wanted some extra money to get some cool kicks.
Well, now with the business at this level, if you go back to yourself 5 years ago just getting started, what would you say to get here a little faster?
Honestly, I would probably create more of a brand for myself. You know, I was always focused on just like making money and hustling that. I think this, you know, is really important, just like content and all that kind of stuff, and, you know, documenting the journey, because people really like that, and I think it would do well for my, you know, my brand.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you're on your way, bro, and to see this business that you built is super inspiring. So guys, make sure to follow Marcus's brand down below in the description, and the full instructions for our giveaway are going to be down there as well. That's all we got for this video. Thank you guys so much for watching. See you in the next one.
Well, you've heard the phrase, one man's trash is another man's treasure. Well, Steve Shives knows it's true. He's made a fortune thanks to some old scrap parts from...
14-year-old bought this old camper for $500 and transformed it with her own two hands. Most teenagers are all too happy to spend their summers vacationing with family or lazing about with their friends. Some, however, embark on an adventure. Ellie Yeater was one such teen. After saving up $500 for a DIY project, she discovered a camper for sale online. It only cost $200, and so the 14-year-old decided to buy it. Once she purchased the camper, she got ready to completely transform it. The vehicle had originally been used for camping and hunting, and it was in pretty rough shape. It was fair to say she had her work cut out for her. Ellie got the idea to renovate the camper after her older brother Isaiah built a tiny cabin on their family's property. She wanted her own hangout spot, but she preferred something cuter and closer to the house so she could have electricity and Wi-Fi. She saw this as an opportunity to let her personality shine through with her design choices. That's exactly why she decided to paint the inside a peach color and fill it with polka dots and stripes. It suggested a fun and laid-back kind of setting. Molly's father, Larry, helped with the carpentry, and her grandmother even made curtains to hang inside. Considering how small her living space was going to be, there were surprisingly lots of windows to cover. During the day, however, she planned to let in a lot of natural light. Many other components of the camper were outdated. Guessing that it was made in the 1970s, the original tiled floor featured a peculiar green pattern. Ellie decided to place new tiles on the floor with a more updated and modern appeal. She collected items that she could use to decorate the camper, too. She wanted to make sure it reflected her own personality and items like this chic dress form. She even made sure to construct a winding path to her new hideaway. Ellie hoped to save up for a window air conditioning unit to install the very next summer. That way, she could enjoy sleepovers with her friends during the summertime without worrying about people becoming uncomfortable and overheating. She also hoped to invite a few friends over for a party. There was plenty of space for them to hang out, and they could even gather around the renovated kitchen bench seating. It looked like the camper was ready for its big premiere. You can see that Ellie took every possible detail into consideration. Not only did she spend a lot of time making the inside look brand new, but she did it on the exterior too. It was all in a summer's work for Ellie. It just shows that with a little creativity and elbow grease, you can turn anything into an awesome hangout space. Ellie was certainly going to enjoy spending time in her renovated camper.
Well, you're about to discover, maybe for the first time in your life, that wealth is not money, and money's not wealth. Real estate's not wealth either. Neither is gold or silver. What is wealth? I believe that wealth is one thing. Wealth is the value that you create for someone other than you. That's what wealth is. Wealth is the value that you create for someone other than you. And so the more we develop our ability to create value for other people, the more wealthy we are. And the reason I say money's not wealth, think about it like this. If you were stuck on a desert island and you had hundreds of millions of dollars in cash, what would it be worth? Nothing, right? If you're stranded there, nobody knows you're there, nobody can find you, all that money doesn't do you any good. If you're there with another person and they have food and you have water and they have no water and you have no food, then your water becomes your wealth because you can trade them some of your water for some of your food. Are y'all tracking? And so everything that we desire, we get by giving somebody else something they desire. The more value we create for other people, the more wealth we have. It's just that simple. Now, money is one of the stores of value. That's what money is. Money is a store of value, and it's also a way to transfer value. It's also a way to represent value that you've already created, right? So if you think about money as like a certification, right? Like it's a certificate that proves that you've created value for someone other than yourself, right? And so like if you go to Eddie V's and you're a nice person, right? And you say, well, I would like for y'all to serve me some food. They are going to say, okay, we'll serve you some food, but at the end, they expect you to produce proof that you serve somebody other than you, and that proof shows up in the way of money, right? Because that's all money does. Money shows people that you deserve to to have somebody create value for you because you can prove you created value for someone else, right? And here's what's really cool. All of us are good at different things. So we all have different value that we can create for other people. And if we keep the value that we create to ourselves, it doesn't really do us that much good. But if we spread the value, the value that we create for other people, if we spread that around, then it becomes more valuable. Now, here's what's really interesting. I can't create value for someone until I know what's valuable to that someone. So wealth creation has, like, a lot to do with discovery, like discovering what other people value. And if I'm going to know what other people value, then I got to know where do those values come from? Like, where do values come from? There are things you value that I don't value. There are things I value that you don't value, right? And there are things that we both value, but you might value more than me or I might value more than you. Huh. So where do our values come from? Okay, I believe the first place that values come from is past, perceived, I'm just going to do PERC, perceived voids create present pursued values. Are y'all tracking? Past perceived voids create present pursued values. What does that mean? That means if I feel like something was missing in the past, I will work in the present to fill the void I had in the past, right? So that's why if people grow up in a place where they're in like dire hunger conditions or feast or famine, they value food like at a very high level, right? That's why people who, so for me, like I like cars. I like them. I like cars. I grew up working on cars, right? But I grew up in a family where when I was growing up, my parents never bought a new car ever. They had seven boys. Here's what boys do. They eat you out of house and home, right? Boys can just, it's like they're a bottomless food pit, right? And I can remember, like, if I was in elementary school, if I was going to eat a sandwich, I wouldn't eat a sandwich. I'd eat two, three, or four sandwiches, right? But I like cars. And so we grew up with buying $50 cars, $100 cars, and then working on them and driving them until they broke down. Then we go buy another $50 car, $100 car, and we had no car payments, right? So I like cars. I used to see people with nice cars. I'm like, why do they have nice cars? We don't have nice cars, right? So that's a past perceived void in my life, right? So it became a present pursued value. Some people like, why do you have all these expensive cars? Well, expensive is a relative term anyway. I don't even, like, that's really relative. Like, it depends on, like, what is expensive to you, right? So, but the reason I, like, have a collection of, I say a collection, I've got some very nice cars is because I like cars, because that was, for me, a past perceived void. I work out. Why do I work out? Because in the past, I've been out of shape. And in the past, my body hurt. The more out of shape I was, the more my body hurt. So that's a past perceived void that created a present pursued value. Are y'all tracking? And so a lot of times we don't even know where these things that we value came from, right? I value entrepreneurship. Why? Because in the past I used to have jobs, and they always came with a boss. And I don't know. The word boss means, like, they're going to be bossing me around. That's what, like, they're going to tell me, like, can I go? No. And I can't even finish the question, right? Can I have? No. And I don't like to have to ask for permission. I don't like permission. In fact, the best way to get me to do something is to tell me I can't do it. I'm that dude, okay? I know none of you entrepreneurs are that way, right? So you started business because you love people telling you what to do. Okay. Judgment-free zone. And so I like autonomy. My parents, great parents, they weren't perfect parents by any stretch of imagination, which is why I did not become a perfect parent. Okay, so but they were great parents for me and my brothers, right? And they were very authoritarian. Like it didn't matter if I was 7 or 17. Why? The answer was always going to be the same, because I said so. Right. So I liked autonomy. So when I wasn't at home, I didn't like teachers telling me what to do at school. I didn't like my parents telling me what to do at home. And then I got a job, and the boss wanted to tell me, and everybody wanted to tell me what to do. And I know it's my own little weirdness going on in my mind palace, but like you got yours, I got mine, and I don't like people telling me what to do. So I want to live as autonomous. Now, I want God to tell me what to do, but I don't like humans bossing me around, okay, because their motive is suspect. God's motive is not suspect, right? Right? And that's why I don't like it when people on my team call me, oh, this is my boss. I'm not your boss. I don't even like the word boss. I don't have an outfit that matches a boss. You don't have an outfit that matches a boss. So unless we're talking about business optimization success secrets from Boss Moves, then again, that's a different story. But not bossing people around. Anyway, so y'all get it. Past perceived voids create present pursued values. But also, the second place values come from, is present, pursued, I don't think I spelled that right, pursued victories create present pursued values. So present pursued victories, the things I'm working towards winning right now, will cause me to value that thing, and so I've got to value. I want to win. So because I want to win, okay. For instance, I'm gonna put my son-in-law on blast. So my son-in-law, I mean, we're really, really close until we get on the golf course, and then we try to beat each other's brains out. It's great, okay. So he wants to beat me really, really bad. I want to beat him really, really bad. And for a while, I just beat him all the time. And then, like, I lost my mojo, and then he beat me all the time, and he was sending his mom text messages like, there's a new sheriff in town, and then his mom would call me, and I'm like, is this really happening? Okay, cool. So I started working on my short game again, and so now it's like the last three tournaments we've had, we play three-round tournaments, and we have this trophy, and every time you win three rounds, you get to put your name on the trophy. No, it's not on the news, it's not on ESPN, nobody knows but us, but we relish this victory so much, right? And so what we do, because we both want to win, is we both spend time working on our game, because present pursued victories create present values. So the things that we felt like we're missing in the past, that creates value for us. The things that we're working on winning in the present, and then the last one, is future pursued, I think I spelled that right, I don't know. Pursued visions create present perceived values. So what does that mean? That means I can see an outcome down the road that is worth sacrificing right now for, so I'll sacrifice the short term on the altar of the long term. I'll sacrifice, like, my pleasure right now because I've got this vision down the road. And I'll take some time off of playing golf. And I'll take some time off of practicing my guitar. I'll take some time off from something I want to do for me. Like, okay, give you a for instance. I am a foodie. If I wanted to, I could easily weigh 400, 500, 600 pounds. It would be easy. Like, I like food. You say, what kind of food? Almost all kinds. I mean, I don't like pork, and I don't like shrimp, and I don't like yucky stuff. It's disgusting. But I like to eat. And the better it is, the more of it I like to eat. I'm just keeping it real. Like, Brother Man can throw it down. I can fling it down. Hear me when I tell you. I mean, where are my foodies? Where are my foodies? Okay? But because I have this future vision, right? Like, I've got this future vision. I've got a granddaughter. She's 3. One of the highlights of my life, my entire existence on this planet as a human, was when I got to dance with my daughter at her wedding. That was a highlight for me. Okay? So, one of my future visions that I have is to dance with my granddaughter, not at her wedding. My 3-year-old granddaughter. She's not going to get married at 3. That's not what I mean. Like, my granddaughter who is 3, when she becomes an adult, one of my objectives is to dance with her at her wedding. Well, let's say she gets married when she's 21, like my daughter did. Okay? She'll be 4 in July, so that gives me 17 more years. Well, in 17 years, I'll be 79. right? You know what that tells me? That tells me as much as I love food, and I do love it, I don't like it, y'all. Hear me when I tell you. If I'm going to eat something, I want it to taste. I don't even want to waste any time eating food that don't taste good. Okay, y'all tracking. Like, I'm the guy who, when I make spaghetti, I season the water I boil my noodles in. I'm that dude. Okay, how many of y'all tracking? Okay, now y'all know who y'all dealing with. Okay, so, just keeping it real. Okay, so, but because I want to dance with my granddaughter at her wedding, when she gets married, I don't eat food until 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And I drink water in the morning, and I have a window to eat between 1 p.m. and 9 p.m. It opens at 1 with a protein shake. Then I'll eat some snacks in between, like some carrot chips or some celery or something good with some different whatever dip I decide. I'll mix some honey mustard and some ranch, and I know that's not healthy. I don't really care. This is my vision, y'all. You do you. I'm going to do me. Okay, I know that's not the healthiest thing in the world, but it's what I do right now. So if y'all want me to do better, pray for me. Okay, so, and then I'll eat dinner. So that's, but I'm going to make sure my protein shake is really, really good, and I'm going to make sure my snacks are really, really good, and I'm going to make sure when I eat dinner, oh, look at him, is really, really good. Okay, so what am I telling you? I'm telling you what I'm willing, my value comes from something that I desire that's way in the future, that I'm willing to sacrifice right now on, right? It's too many people, they don't understand that today is yesterday's tomorrow, and they act as if the actions they take today have no consequences in the future, right? And so the definition of sacrifice is to let go of something of a lower nature so you can take a hold of something of a higher nature. And the best way for us to live our lives, it's like it's been proven, it doesn't matter whether it's in finances, whether it's in health, whether it's in relationships, it doesn't matter what arena we're talking about, sacrificing the short term on the altar of the long term always ends better than sacrificing the long term on the altar of the short term. It always does. It's just like a principle of life. Okay, so now I know when I'm looking at my particular marketplace in whatever particular niche I'm looking at, then I know what I have to do if I want to create wealth is I have to figure out how to help somebody fill their past perceived voids or how to win their present pursued victories or how to fulfill their future pursued visions. How many of y'all tracking? Okay, so now when I'm looking at somebody, I know what kind of value, how to discover what you value. Because you're going to value one of those three things. Whatever you're working on in your life is probably going to fit into one of those three categories. Now, wealth is the result of value creation. The better your ability to create value for someone other than yourself, the wealthier you are. And sometimes that'll show up as money. Sometimes it'll show up as real estate. Sometimes it'll show up as like hard assets like gold and silver. But or it'll show up as digital assets like Bitcoin and Ethereum. But at the end of the day, whatever you pay for with money that you earned by creating value for someone other than yourself. So the very act of entrepreneurship by its very nature has to be self-sacrificing if you're going to win as an entrepreneur. How many of y'all got it? Wave at me. Say, I got it. Wave at me. Okay, good. Cool. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at what God set up in Genesis chapter 1, and I call it the four levels of value. So because here's what y'all, like, here's one of the things I think we don't understand sometimes. All value is not created equally, right? What does that mean? All value is not created equally. So I can say, well, but I created this value. Yeah, but the problem is either you valued it or maybe one other person valued it. You wonder why, like if you're not doing well financially, I'm going to tell you why. Because the pool of people that you've decided to create value for is very small. Or the value that you've created for them, they value it at a very low level. Like it's not like a big deal, right? I'm going to pay more for a car than I am for a pair of shoes. Why? That's a bigger value. Why? It can take me farther faster than a pair of shoes, right? So to me, so Watch this. So, like, even if I go to eat at Ocean Prime or I go to eat at Eddie V's and it costs $500 for dinner for, like, seven people or whatever, I value that more than I value the money, number one. But I also value it because it gives me the time that I want to spend or invest into the people that I care about the most, and I don't have to, like, I don't have to make the food, my wife doesn't have to make the food, my daughter doesn't have to make the food, my son, my son-in-law, we can just sit down, we can go to dinner, we can pay somebody, they make all the stuff. Like, we don't have to go in the kitchen and do anything. We don't even have to open the refrigerator. It's amazing. They just keep bringing it to you. And then you don't have to clean off the table. I mean, if you don't want to, you don't even have to put your own pepper on your food. They'll put the pepper on for you. This is amazing. And then, when you get done, you don't have to clean the table off. You don't have to wash any dishes. You just leave. What? Sign me up right now. How many of y'all checking? Like, so we have to get to the place in our lives where we realize that all value is not created equally, right? So while I'm giving you things that are not created equally, let me give you something that is created equally. Because all value is not created equally, all no's are created equally, but all yeses are not. What do I mean all no's are created equally? If you do a presentation to a potential client who does not have the wherewithal to buy your offer, and they say no, it feels the exact same as if you do a presentation to somebody who does have the wherewithal to buy your offer, and they say no. A no is 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 a no. Does that make sense? Okay. But if you talk to somebody who does not have the ability to take advantage of your offer, and you make an offer to that person, and they say yes, that's very different than when you talk to a person who has the desire to take advantage of your offer, and they say yes. They have the ability. One has the ability, one doesn't have the ability. Those are two very different yeses. All no's are created equally. All yeses are not. Why would you...
Hi, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Vanessa's Van Life Journey. I am Vanessa, and I live in a van, and her name is Treasure. But right now, where is Treasure, y'all? Where Treasure at, y'all? I don't see Treasure, y'all. Treasure done ran away, y'all. Anyway, you guys, I am here today in front of my new home, you guys. I still have Treasure, so I still do van life, but I also have a travel trailer now, you guys. I purchased this travel trailer yesterday, you guys, and I am going to give you a empty house tour. This is my first travel trailer. I am so happy. Excuse my French. Excuse my look, y'all. I know I look rusty, dusty, and crusty. And yes, I am all of that because I have been cleaning my new home, and her name is Blessing. If you want to know more about how I got this travel trailer, just make sure you leave it in the comments down below. And let me know if you want me to do a story time on how I got Blessing. So I'm going to show you guys Blessing. I guess I'll show you the outside of her first, and then we could go in the inside and do a empty house tour. Yay! I'm so excited! Is y'all happy for me? Look, is y'all happy for me? Not are you happy for me? Is y'all happy for me? Y'all, I got a house. I got something that I could stand up in. I got a bed, y'all. I ain't got to sleep on the floor no more, y'all. Come on, y'all. Let's take a look. Okay, you guys, so this is my new home. This is a travel trailer. This is a 1988 resort. I'm going to have to look in the front to see the full name of it. But this is my little travel trailer, you guys. It's not big, but it's big enough for me. So let me go around and take y'all around the front of my travel trailer. This is where they have spaces for two propane tanks.
batteries, and this is a Terry Resort by Fleetwood, you guys. So this is the outside of the trailer, and if you come around on this side, this is the other side of the trailer. And this is just all the stuff that I really don't know anything about. And that is the top of the trailer. So we have three windows on this side. This is the kitchen window. This is my window over the bed. And this is another window that would be over the bunk bed area. Seeing is a whole window for the front of the van, I think. Or I said van, I meant trailer. And this is the outside. I do have a covered patio area. I am renting the spot that my trailer is in, but my trailer, I purchased it. It could be towed away, and I could take it to wherever I want to. But for now, we're just going to continue to pay for the rent in the space that it was already in. And as you can see, I have a big window here. That's like the window over the kitchen area, over the table. And then this window right here is over the bed again. And then we just go in the inside. So let's go in the inside, you guys.
What are you waiting on? Come in. Into my tiny home, my little travel trailer, you guys. So as you come in through the front door, you can close the door here and lock it. There is a little switch right here where you can turn the lights on and off as you come into the door. And there is a little area right here where you could just drop your, I guess this would be like a sofa table where you could just drop your keys, put your purse down right here. And there's also a little cabinet under here where you can grab your, put your purse in there, put your shoes in there. And there's also a fire extinguisher under here as well. And there's also a little area where you can just kick your shoes off and just leave them there. So that's this area when you first walk in. And so no matter what time or day or night you come in, you can turn on the light when you first come in. And over in this area right here, there is a closet. I have some stuff just thrown up in here right now because I'm doing an empty home tour. And so I just threw my phone stuff up in here. So that is a closet. And then we have a drawer under here. We have two drawers underneath the closet. And next to the closet is our bathroom, you guys. We have a bathroom now. Yay! We have a whole bathroom, you guys. I have a shower, a bathtub, a sink, and a toilet. So I will take you guys in there in just a minute. To the toilet, we have a refrigerator that doesn't work. But we're just giving you a tour of how the place looks now, because you guys already know that I'm going to put my touch and I'm going to put my spin on it, and I'm going to remodel and I am going to redecorate. So yeah, So, and up at the top, there is more storage at the top. There is a lot of storage in this little tiny home. So, and this is an area where you can get to everything that you need to get to. And a little bit more storage, a little, well, not really, because that's all your components and everything down at the bottom. So let me show you guys the bathroom. Okay, you guys, as you come into the bathroom, you can see straight away that there is a sink and there are two shelves under cabinet storage where the sink is, and there is the sink. We have running water, you guys. Yes, baby, yes. And we have a window right here that we can open up to get some airflow in, and hi, we have a mirror right here, and over here to our left, I don't know, do you, there's a certain way to open that one, but over to your left, we have a shelf, so we have a cabinet, so we have two shelves inside that cabinet to store all of our toiletries on the day-to-day. Isn't that nice, you guys? And we have a towel rack right here that we can put a towel on. And, you guys, we have a toilet. Yes! Y'all, this toilet was dirty, and I cleaned it, and it looks really, really clean now. So we have a, I don't know what kind of toilet you would call this, cassette toilet, I don't know. And we have a trash can next to the toilet, you guys. Very, very small space, but it's efficient because it has everything in it that you need. And over here, we have a little small tub, but it is deep, you guys. Girl, I could go scuba diving up in this bathtub. It's so deep, but it's small, but it's deep. And they had this piece of wood already cut out, you guys. And I am loving this piece of wood right here. I could use this piece of wood to sit on. So, yeah, I'm going to actually keep this wood here and transform it, or get me another piece of wood and cut it and transform it. So that is the shower. And we do have a shower head that can come down. And I can also put it over towards the toilet and run water in the toilet as well. And just put that back up. And the water works in the bathtub as well, you guys. And we also have a skylight. And we also have this little thing for the shower curtain. Yes, you guys, that is a blessing, y'all. We have a bathroom. Yes. Okay, you guys, on this side of the travel trailer, we have my bed. And this, I was told, was a bunk bed area, but I guess they disassembled it. So I don't know what I'm going to do with this area, but it was a bunk bed area. So we have the bed area and the bunk bed area. If you wanted to still convert this back into a bunk bed, I guess you could. And over to my right, I have a kitchen, you guys. I have a whole kitchen. Yay! I have a double sink, and I have this little thing here that you could raise up and put right there, and use as a cutting board for a countertop or whatever. And we have under cabinet storage. We have a little area right here where you can keep your dish towels or whatever you need to wash your dishes with. And we have two shelves at the bottom. And we have three drawers. And this one just folds down all the way at the bottom. And we also have a storage at the top over here. Plenty of storage, you guys. And storage at the top. Two shelves. Here on this side, we have two shelves on this side. And we have that big window. These are the original curtains that the person that lived here before me made. All this will be coming down, but I'm doing an empty home tour, so I get to show you everything that is in the apartment or in my apartment, in my new travel trailer home, before I get to move in. So here is a table right here, and I don't know how to do this, but maybe I should have did it. I don't know how to do that, but it does raise up and down, and I was told that this converts into a bed as well. But they removed the other seat that was over here, so I only have one seat in the inside of my little travel trailer. And you guys, oh my goodness, let me show you my most prized possession. Tell me what it is in the comments right below. Tell me right now in the comments down below, what is my prized possession, you guys? You guys know what one of my must-haves is that I cannot live without. And I got, so you guys know, one of my prized possessions that I can't live without is a stove. We got a stove, you guys, and not only do we have a four-burner stove, girl, we got an oven. We have an oven as well, you guys. Now, it's not currently hooked up to propane, so I don't know if it works, but keep your fingers crossed with me, because I hope it works, you guys. We're going to hook this thing up to some propane tomorrow. And I also have a hood over the top. I don't know. Okay. Well. Okay, how? Okay, that's how you turn it off. And that is a light that works, but the light is not that bright. We probably gonna have to change out that bulb, you guys. And again, these are the cabinets over my stove. We have two cabinets in this area right here. And again, the sink area. I am happy, you guys. This is a small space, but as you can see, I could stand up now. I could stand up. And another thing, you guys, we have air. We have air. I turned the air off so I could film this video, but we have air, you guys, so I can stay cool and my brain ain't gonna fry. Like I said, you guys, over in this area, I have a lot of storage as well. On the side here, this is storage here. I could lift this up, and there's under storage here. The place came with a TV and a DVD player. This is my ice maker that one of my subscribers sent me. And there is a cubby hole right here and a cubby hole underneath there. And up here at the top, anything that you want to put up here, when you go to sleep at night, you can put your glasses up here, your water up here, a book up here, a little lamp up here, whatever you want. And again, this is the front window. If you want to take that thing off that's in the front, I'm sure you could take that off and have this window, you know, exposed at all times if you wanted to. And then there is a little light underneath here. I am going to switch out and change out all of the lights, you guys. But that is that. So anyway, that is a tour of my unfurnished, empty home. This is my new home, you guys. I still have treasure. So when I get ready to travel and go on the road, I still will be traveling with Treasure. She is still my first home, but this is my second home. We're going to decorate her. We're going to remodel her. We're going to remodel the whole bathroom because the whole bathroom is in shambles and it needs to be remodeled. And we're going to do a couple of little DIY projects in here as well. I'm going to paint the walls, wallpaper, probably backsplash, I don't know, but it's going to have a totally different look when we get through. So let me know in the comments bar below what you think about my new travel trailer. Let me know if you have any ideas for the decorating or the remodeling. And let me know what else y'all want to know in the comments below. So don't forget to like, comment, share, and subscribe. Hit the notification bell to be notified each and every time I upload a new video. You know you're going to want to be here for these remodels. And if you are not subscribed to my other channel, Nomadic Therapy, you need to subscribe to the Behind the Scenes channel because I go live every single day and show you guys in real time what I'm doing in real life. You know you nosy, and you know you want to know what's going on, so you better go subscribe to Nomadic Therapy. And you guys, I make it off of the donations and the contributions of the subscribers. And every time you watch one of my videos, every time you see an ad, every time you leave a comment, every time you thumbs up the video, it helps me out a lot. So if you want to support the channel, all my information is down below in the description box below the video. Just look down below the video and click more 2 times and you will see all of my information. Okay, you guys, I hope you enjoyed this tiny home tour of my Fleetwood Terry travel trailer. Thanks for watching.
I'd like to tell you about the strangest secret in the world. Some years ago, the late Nobel Prize-winning Dr. Albert Schweitzer was being interviewed in London, and a reporter asked him, "Doctor, what's wrong with men today?" And the great doctor was silent a moment, and then he said, "Men simply don't think." It's about this that I want to talk with you. We live today in a golden age. This is an era that man has looked forward to, dreamed of, and worked toward for thousands of years. But since it's here, we pretty well take it for granted. We in America are particularly fortunate to live in the richest land that ever existed on the face of the earth, a land of abundant opportunity for everyone. But do you know what happens? Well, let's take 100 men who start even at the age of 25. Do you have any idea what will happen to those men by the time they're 65? These 100 men who all start even at the age of 25 believe they're going to be successful. If you ask any one of these men if he wanted to be a success, he'd tell you he did. And you'd notice that he was eager toward life, that there was a certain sparkle to his eye, an erectness to his carriage, and life seemed like a pretty interesting adventure to him. But by the time they're 65, one will be rich. 4 will be financially independent. 5 will still be working. 54 will be broke. Now think a moment. Out of the 100, only 5 make the grade. Now why do so many fail? What has happened to the sparkle that was there when they were 25? What's become of the dreams, the hopes, the plans? And why is there such a large disparity between what these men intended to do and what they actually accomplished? When we say about 5% achieve success, we have to define success. And here's the best definition I've ever been able to find. Success is the progressive realization of a worthy ideal. If a man is working toward a predetermined goal and knows where he's going, that man is a success. If he's not doing that, he's a failure. Success is the progressive realization of a worthy ideal. Rollo May, the distinguished psychiatrist, wrote a wonderful book called Man's Search for Himself. And in this book, he says, the opposite of courage in our society is not cowardice. It is conformity. And there you have the trouble today. It's conformity. People acting like everyone else without knowing why, without knowing where they're going. Now think of it. In America right now, there are over 18 million people, 65 years of age and older. And most of them are broke. They're dependent on someone else for life's necessities. Now, we learn to read by the time we're 7. We learn to make a living by the time we're 25. Usually by that time, we're not only making a living, we're supporting a family. And yet, by the time we're 65, we haven't learned how to become financially independent in the richest land that has ever been known. Why? We conform. And the trouble is that we're acting like the wrong percentage group, the 95 who don't succeed. Now, why do these people conform? Well, they really don't know. These people believe that their lives are shaped by circumstances, by things that happen to them, by exterior forces. They're outer-directed people. A survey was made one time that covered a lot of men, working men, and these men were asked, why do you work? Why do you get up in the morning? 19 out of 20 had no idea. If you ask them, they'll say, well, everyone goes to work in the morning, and that's the reason they do it, because everyone else is doing it. Now, let's get back to our definition of success. Who succeeds? The only person who succeeds is the person who is progressively realizing a worthy ideal. He's the person who says, I'm going to become this, and then begins to work toward that goal. I'll tell you who the successful people are. A success is the school teacher who's teaching school because that's what he or she wants to do. The success is the woman who's a wife and mother because she wanted to become a wife and mother and is doing a good job of it. The success is the man who runs the corner gas station because that was his dream. That's what he wanted to do. The success is the successful salesman who wants to become a top-notch salesman and grow and build with his organization. A success is anyone who is doing deliberately a predetermined job because that's what he decided to do deliberately. But only 1 out of 20 does that. That's why today there isn't really any competition unless we make it for ourselves. Instead of competing, all we have to do is create. You know, for 20 years, I looked for the key which would determine what would happen to a human being. Was there a key I wanted to know which would make the future a promise that we could foretell to a large extent? Was there a key that would guarantee a person's becoming successful if he only knew about it and knew how to use it? Well, there is such a key, and I've found it. Have you ever wondered why so many men work so hard and honestly without ever achieving anything in particular, and others don't seem to work hard and yet seem to get everything? They seem to have the magic touch. You've heard them say that about someone. Everything he touches turns to gold. And have you ever noticed that a man who becomes successful tends to continue to become successful? And on the other hand, have you noticed how a man who's a failure tends to continue to fail? Well, it's because of goals. Some of us have goals, some don't. People with goals succeed because they know where they're going. It's that simple. Think of a ship leaving a harbor, and think of it with the complete voyage mapped out and planned. The captain and crew know exactly where it's going and how long it'll take. It has a definite goal. Now, 9,999 times out of 10,000, it will get to where it started out to get. Now, let's take another ship, just like the first, only let's not put a crew on it or a captain at the helm. Let's give it no aiming point, no goal, no destination. We just start the engines and let it go. I think you'll agree with me that if it gets out of the harbor at all, it'll either sink or wind up on some deserted beach or derelict. It can't go anyplace because it has no destination and no guidance, and it's the same with a human being. Take the salesman, for example. There's no other person in the world today with the future of a good salesman. Selling is the world's highest paid profession, if we're good at it and if we know where we're going. Every company needs top-notch salesmen, and they reward those men. The sky's the limit for them. But how many can you find? Someone once said the human race is fixed, not to prevent the strong from winning, but to prevent the weak from losing. The American economy today can be likened to a convoy in time of war. The entire economy is slowed down to protect its weakest link, just as the convoy had to go at the speed that would permit its slowest vessel to remain in formation. That's why it's so easy to make a living today. It takes no particular brains or talent to make a living and support a family today. So we have a plateau of so-called security, if that's what a person's looking for. But we do have to decide how high above this plateau we want to aim. Now let's get back to the strangest secret in the world, the story that I wanted to tell you today. Why do men with goals succeed in life and men without them fail? Well, let me tell you something which, if you really understand it, will alter your life immediately. If you understand completely what I'm going to tell you from this moment on, your life will never be the same again. You will suddenly find that good luck just seems to be attracted to you. The things you want just seem to fall in line, and from now on you won't have the problems, the worries, the gnawing lump of anxiety that perhaps you've experienced before. Doubt, fear, well, they'll be things of the past. Here's the key to success and the key to failure. We become what we think about. Now, let me say that again. We become what we think about. Throughout all history, the great wise men and teachers, philosophers and prophets have disagreed with one another on many different things. It's only on this one point that they are in complete and unanimous agreement. Listen to what Marcus Aurelius, the great Roman emperor, said. A man's life is what his thoughts make of it. Disraeli said this, "Everything comes if a man will only wait. I've brought myself by long meditation to the conviction that a human being with a settled purpose must accomplish it, and that nothing can resist a will that will stake even existence for its fulfillment." Ralph Waldo Emerson said this, "A man is what he thinks about all day long." William James said, "The greatest discovery of my generation is that human beings can alter their lives by altering their attitudes of mind." And he also said, "We need only in cold blood act as if the thing in question were real, and it will become infallibly real by growing into such a connection with our life that it will become real. It will become so knit with habit and emotion that our interests in it will be those which characterize belief." And he also said, "If you only care enough for a result, you will almost certainly attain it. If you wish to be rich, you will be rich. If you wish to be learned, you will be learned. If you wish to be good, you will be good. Only you must then really wish these things and wish them exclusively and not wish at the same time 100 other incompatible things just as strongly." In the Bible, you read in Mark 9:23, "If thou canst believe, all things are possible to him that believeth." My old friend Dr. Norman Vincent Peale put it this way, "This is one of the greatest laws in the universe. Fervently do I wish I had discovered it as a very young man. It dawned upon me much later in life, and I found it to be one of the greatest, if not my greatest discovery outside of my relationship to God. The great law, briefly and simply stated, is that if you think in negative terms, you will get negative results. If you think in positive terms, you will achieve positive results. That is the simple fact," he went on to say, "which is at the basis of an astonishing law of prosperity and success. In three words, believe and succeed." William Shakespeare put it this way, "Our doubts are traitors and make us lose the good we oft might win by fearing to attempt." George Bernard Shaw said, "People are always blaming their circumstances for what they are. I don't believe in circumstances. The people who get on in this world are the people who get up and look for the circumstances they want, and if they can't find them, make them." Well, that's pretty apparent, isn't it? And every person who discovered this for a while believed that he was the first one to work it out. We become what we think about. Now, it stands to reason that a person who's thinking about a concrete and worthwhile goal is going to reach it, because that's what he's thinking about, and we become what we think about. Conversely, the man who has no goal, who doesn't know where he's going, and whose thoughts must therefore be thoughts of confusion and anxiety and fear and worry, becomes what he thinks about. His life becomes one of frustration and fear and anxiety and worry. And if he thinks about nothing, he becomes nothing. Now, how does it work? Why do we become what we think about? Well, I'll tell you how it works as far as we know. Now, to do this, I want to tell you about a situation that parallels the human mind. Suppose a farmer has some land, and it's good, fertile land. Now the land gives the farmer a choice. He may plant in that land whatever he chooses. The land doesn't care. It's up to the farmer to make the decision. Now remember, we're comparing the human mind with the land because the mind, like the land, doesn't care what you plant in it. It will return what you plant, but it doesn't care what you plant. Now let's say that the farmer has two seeds in his hand. One is a seed of corn, the other is nightshade, a deadly poison. He digs two little holes in the earth and he plants both seeds, one corn, the other nightshade. He covers up the holes, waters, and takes care of the land, and what will happen? Invariably, the land will return what's planted. As it's written in the Bible, as ye sow, so shall ye reap. Now remember, the land doesn't care. It'll return poison in just as wonderful abundance as it will corn. So up come the two plants, one corn, one poison. Now the human mind is far more fertile, far more incredible and mysterious than the land, but it works the same way. It doesn't care what we plant. Success, failure. A concrete, worthwhile goal, or confusion. Misunderstanding, fear, anxiety, and so on. But what we plant, it must return to us. You see, the human mind is the last great unexplored continent on Earth. It contains riches beyond our wildest dreams. It will return anything we want to plant. Now, you might say, well, if that's true, why don't people use their minds more? Well, I think they figured out an answer to that one, too. Our mind comes as standard equipment at birth. It's free, and things that are given to us for nothing, we place little value on. Things that we pay money for, we value. The paradox is that exactly the reverse is true. Everything that's really worthwhile in life came to us free. Our minds, our souls, our bodies, our hopes, our dreams, our ambitions, our intelligence, our love of family and children and friends and country, all these priceless possessions are free. But the things that cost us money are actually very cheap and can be replaced at any time. A good man can be completely wiped out and make another fortune. He can do that several times. Even if our home burns down, we can rebuild it. But the things we got for nothing, we can never replace. The human mind isn't used because we take it for granted. Familiarity breeds contempt. It can do any kind of job we assign to it, but generally speaking, we use it for little jobs instead of big, important ones. Universities have proved that most of us are operating on about 10% or less of our abilities. So decide now, what is it you want? Plant your goal in your mind. It's the most important decision you ever make in your entire life. What is it you want? Do you want to be an outstanding salesman? A better worker at your particular job? Do you want to go places in your company? In your community? Do you want to get rich? All you've got to do is plant that seed in your mind, care for it, work steadily toward your goal, and it will become a reality. It not only will, there's no way that it cannot. You see, that's a law, like the laws of Sir Isaac Newton, the laws of gravity. If you get on top of a building and jump off, you'll always go down. You'll never go up, and it's the same with all the other laws of nature. They always work. They're inflexible. Think about your goal in a relaxed, positive way. Picture yourself in your mind's eye as having already achieved this goal. See yourself doing the things you will be doing when you've reached your goal. Ours has been called the phenobarbital age, the age of ulcers and nervous breakdowns and tranquilizers, at a time when medical research has raised us to a new plateau of good health and longevity. Far too many of us worry ourselves into an early grave, trying to cope with things in our own little personal ways, without learning a few great laws that will take care of everything for us. These things we bring on ourselves through our habitual way of thinking. Every one of us is the sum total of his own thoughts. He is where he is because that's exactly where he really wants to be, whether he'll admit that or not. Each of us must live off the fruit of his thoughts in the future, because what you think today and tomorrow, next month and next year, will mold your life and determine your future. You're guided by your mind. I remember one time I was driving through eastern Arizona and I saw one of those giant earth-moving machines roaring along the road at about 35 miles an hour with what looked like 30 tons of dirt in it. A tremendous, incredible machine. And there was a little man perched way up on top with the wheel in his hands guiding it. And as I drove along, I was struck by the similarity of that machine to the human mind. Just suppose you're sitting at the controls of such a vast source of energy. Are you going to sit back and fold your arms and let it run itself into a ditch? Or are you going to keep both hands firmly on the wheel and control and direct this power to a specific, worthwhile purpose? It's up to you. You're in the driver's seat. You see, the very law that gives us success is a two-edged sword. We must control our thinking. The same rule that can lead a man to a life of success, wealth, happiness, and all the things he ever dreamed of for himself and his family. That very same law can lead him into the gutter. It's all in how he uses it, for good or for bad. This is the strangest secret in the world. Now, why do I say it's strange, and why do I call it a secret? Actually, it isn't a secret at all. It was first promulgated by some of the earliest wise men, and it appears again and again throughout the Bible. But very few people have learned it, understand it. That's why it's strange, and why for some equally strange reason it virtually remains a secret. I believe that you could go out and walk down the main street of your town and ask one man after another what the secret of success is, and you probably wouldn't run into one man in a month who could tell you. Now, this information is enormously valuable to us if we really understand it and apply it. It's valuable to us not only for our own lives, but the lives of those around us, our families, employees, associates, and friends. Life should be an exciting adventure. It should never be a bore. A man should live fully, be alive. He should be glad to get out of bed in the morning. He should be doing a job he likes to do because he does it well. One time I heard Grove Patterson, the great late editor-in-chief of the Toledo Daily Blade, make a speech, and as he concluded his speech, he said something I've never forgotten. He said, "My years in the newspaper business have convinced me of several things. Among them, that people are basically good, and that we came from someplace and we're going someplace. So we should make our time here an exciting adventure. The architect of the universe didn't build a stairway leading nowhere." And the greatest teacher of all, the carpenter from the plains of Galilee, gave us the secret time and time again. "As ye believe, so shall it be done unto you." I've explained the strangest secret in the world and how it works. Now, on this side, I want to explain how you can prove to yourself the enormous returns possible in your own life by putting this secret to a practical test. I want you to make a test that will last 30 days. It isn't going to be easy, but if you'll give it a good try, it will completely change your life for the better. Now, back in the 17th century, Sir Isaac Newton, the English mathematician and natural philosopher, gave us some natural laws of physics which apply as much to human beings as they do to the movement of bodies in the universe. And one of these laws is that for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. Simply stated, as it applies to you and me, it means we can achieve nothing without paying the price. The results of your 30-day experiment will be in direct proportion to the effort you put forth. To be a doctor, you must pay the price of long years of difficult study. To be successful in selling, and remember that each of us succeeds to the extent of his ability to sell, selling our families on our ideas, selling education in schools, selling our children on the advantages of living the good and honest life, selling our associates and employees on the importance of being exceptional people, to, of course, the profession of selling itself. But to be successful in selling our way to the good life, we must be willing to pay the price. Now, what is that price? Well, it's many things. First, it's understanding emotionally, as well as intellectually, that we literally become what we think about, that we must control our thoughts if we're to control our lives. It's understanding fully that as ye sow, so shall ye reap. Second, it's cutting away all fetters from the mind and permitting it to soar as it was divinely designed to do. It's the realization that your limitations are self-imposed and that the opportunities for you today are enormous beyond belief. It's rising above narrow-minded pettiness and prejudice. And third, it's using all your courage to force yourself to think positively on your own problem, to set a definite and clearly defined goal for yourself, to let your marvelous mind think about your goal from all possible angles, to let your imagination speculate freely upon many different possible solutions, to refuse to believe that there are any circumstances sufficiently strong to defeat you in the accomplishment of your purpose, to act promptly and decisively when your course is clear, and to keep constantly aware of the fact that you are, at this moment, standing in the middle of your own acres of diamonds, as Russell Conwell used to point out. And fourth, save at least 10% of every dollar you earn. It's also remembering that no matter what your present job, it has enormous possibilities if you're willing to pay the price. Now let's just go over the important points in the price each of us must pay to achieve the wonderful life that can be ours. It is, of course, worth any price. 1. You will become what you think about. 2. Remember the word imagination and let your mind begin to soar. 3. Courage. Concentrate on your goal every day. 4. save 10% of what you earn, and 5, action. Ideas are worthless unless we act on them. Now, I'll try to outline the 30-day test I want you to make. Keep in mind that you have nothing to lose by making this test and everything you could possibly want to gain. There are two things that may be said of everyone. Each of us wants something, and each of us is afraid of something. I want you to write on a card what it is you want more than anything else. It may be more money. Perhaps you'd like to double your income or make a specific amount of money. It may be a beautiful home. It may be success at your job. It may be a particular position in life. It could be a more harmonious family. Each of us wants something. Now write down on your card specifically what it is you want. Make sure it's a single goal and clearly defined. You needn't show it to anyone, but carry it with you so that you can look at it several times a day. Think about it in a cheerful, relaxed, positive way each morning when you get up. And immediately you have something to work for, something to get out of bed for, something to live for. Look at it every chance you get during the day and just before going to bed at night. And as you look at it, remember that you must become what you think about. And since you're thinking about your goal, you realize that soon it will be yours. In fact, it's yours really the moment you write it down and begin to think about it. Look at the abundance all around you as you go about your daily business. You have as much right to this abundance as any other living creature. It's yours for the asking. Now we come to the difficult part. Difficult because it means the formation of what is probably a brand new habit, and new habits are not easily formed. Once formed, however, it will follow you for the rest of your life. Stop thinking about what it is you fear. Each time a fearful or negative thought comes into your consciousness, replace it with a mental picture of your positive and worthwhile goal. And there'll come times when you'll feel like giving up. It's easier for a human being to think negatively than positively. That's why only 5% are successful. You must begin now to place yourself in that group. For 30 days, you must take control of your mind. It will think about only what you permit it to think about. Each day for this 30-day test, do more than you have to do. In addition to maintaining a cheerful, positive outlook, give of yourself more than you've ever done before. Do this knowing that your returns in life must be in direct proportion to what you give. The moment you decide on a goal to work toward, you're immediately a successful person. You are then in that rare and successful category of people who know where they're going. Out of every 100 people, you belong to the top 5. Don't concern yourself too much with how you're going to achieve your goal. Leave that completely to a power greater than yourself. All you have to do is know where you're going. The answers will come to you of their own accord and at the right time. Remember these words from the Sermon on the Mount, and remember them well. Keep them constantly before you this month of your test. Ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. For every one that asketh, receiveth, and he that seeketh, findeth, and to him that knocketh, it shall be opened. It's as marvelous and as simple as that. In fact, it's so simple that in our seemingly complicated world, it's difficult for an adult to understand that all he needs is a purpose and faith. For 30 days, do your very best. If you're a salesman, go at it as you've never done before, not in a hectic fashion, but with the calm, cheerful assurance that time well spent will give you the abundance in return you deserve and want. If you're a homemaker, devote your 30-day test to completely giving of yourself without thinking about receiving anything in return, and you'll be amazed at the difference it makes in your life. No matter what your job, do it as you've never done it before for 30 days. And if you've kept your goal before you every day, you'll wonder and marvel at this new life you've found. Dorothea Brand, the outstanding editor and writer, discovered it for herself and tells about it in her fine book, Wake Up and Live. Her entire philosophy is reduced to the words, act as though it were impossible to fail. She made her own test with sincerity and faith, and her entire life was changed to one of overwhelming success. Now, you make your test for 30 full days. Don't start your test until you've made up your mind to stick with it. You see, by being persistent, you're demonstrating faith. Persistence is simply another word for faith. If you didn't have faith, you'd never persist. If you should fail during your first 30 days, by that I mean suddenly find yourself overwhelmed by negative thoughts, you've got to start over again from that point and go 30 more days. Gradually, your new habit will form until you find yourself one of that wonderful minority to whom virtually nothing is impossible. And don't forget the card. It's vitally important as you begin this new way of living. On one side of the card, write your goal, whatever it may be. On the other side, write the words we've quoted from the Sermon on the Mount. Ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. Nothing great was ever accomplished without inspiration. See that during these crucial first 30 days, your own inspiration is kept at a peak. And above all, don't worry. Worry brings fear, and fear is crippling. The only thing that can cause you to worry during your test is trying to do it all yourself. Know that all you have to do is hold your goal before you. Everything else will take care of itself. Remember also to keep calm and cheerful. Don't let petty things annoy you and get you off course. Now, since making this test is difficult, some will say, why should I bother? Well, look at the alternative. No one wants to be a failure. No one really wants to be a mediocre individual. No one wants a life constantly filled with worry and fear and frustration. Therefore, remember that you must reap that which you sow. If you sow negative thoughts, your life will be filled with negative things. If you sow positive thoughts, your life will be cheerful, successful, and positive. Now, gradually, you will have a tendency to forget what you've heard on this recording. Play it often. Keep reminding yourself of what you must do to form this new habit. Gather your whole family around at regular intervals and listen to what's been said here. You know, most men will tell you that they want to make money without understanding the law. The only people who make money work in a mint. The rest of us must earn money. This is what causes those who keep looking for something for nothing or a free ride to fail in life. The only way to earn money is by providing people with services or products which are needed and useful. We exchange our time and our product or service for the other man's money. Therefore, the law is that our financial return will be in direct proportion to our service. Now, success is not the result of making money. Making money is the result of success, and success is in direct proportion to our service. Most people have this law backwards. They believe that you're successful if you earn a lot of money. The truth is that you can only earn money after you're successful. It's like the story of the man who sat in front of the stove and said to it, give me heat, and then I'll add the wood. How many men and women do you know, or do you suppose there are today, who take the same attitude toward life? There are millions. We've got to put the fuel in before we can expect heat. Likewise, we've got to be of service first before we can expect money. Don't concern yourself with the money. Be of service, build, work, dream, create. Do this and you'll find there's no limit to the prosperity and abundance that will come to you. Prosperity, you know, is founded upon a law of mutual exchange. Any person who contributes to prosperity must prosper in turn himself. Sometimes the return will not come from those you serve, but it must come to you from someplace, because that's the law. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. As you go daily through your 30-day test period, remember that your success will always be measured by the quality and quantity of service you render, and money is a yardstick for measuring this service. No man can get rich himself unless he enriches others. Now, there are no exceptions to a law. You can drive down any street in America and from your car estimate the service that's being rendered by the people living on that street. Had you ever thought of this yardstick before? It's interesting. Some, like ministers and priests and other devoted people, measure their returns in the realm of the spiritual. But again, their returns are equal to their service. Once this law is fully understood, any thinking person can tell his own fortune. If he wants more, he must be of more service to those from whom he receives his return. If he wants less, he has only to reduce his service. This is the price you must pay for what you want. If you believe you can enrich yourself by deluding others, you can end only by deluding yourself. It may take some time, but just as surely as you breathe, you'll get back what you put out. Don't ever make the mistake of thinking you can avert this. It's impossible. The prisons and the streets where the lonely walk are filled with people who tried to make new laws just for themselves. We may avoid the laws of man for a while, but there are greater laws that cannot be broken. An outstanding medical doctor recently pointed out 6 steps that will help you realize success. 1, set yourself a definite goal. 2, quit running yourself down. 3, stop thinking of all the reasons why you cannot be successful and instead think of all the reasons why you can. 4, trace your attitudes back through your childhood and try to discover where you first got the idea you couldn't be successful, if that's the way you've been thinking. 5, change the image you have of yourself by writing out a description of the person you would like to be. And 6, act the part of the successful person you have decided to become. The doctor who wrote those words is a noted West Coast psychiatrist, Dr. David Harold Fink. Do what the experts since the dawn of recorded history have told you you must do. Pay the price. by becoming the person you want to become. It's not nearly as difficult as living unsuccessfully. Make your 30-day test, then repeat it again, and each time it will become more a part of you until you'll wonder how you could ever have lived any other way. Live this new way and the floodgates of abundance will open and pour over you more riches than you may have dreamed existed. Money? Yes, lots of it. But what's more important, you'll have peace. You'll be in that wonderful minority who lead calm, cheerful, successful lives. Start today. You have nothing to lose, but you have a whole life to win. This is all.
$14 billion. That's how much Alibaba, the Chinese e-commerce giant, made in just 24 hours. That's more than the total online U.S. sales from both Black Friday and Cyber Monday combined. It happened during an unofficial Chinese holiday called Singles Day. But what is Alibaba? What is Singles Day? And how did they make so much money so quickly? Singles Day literally translates to Bear Sticks Holiday, a reference to the Chinese expression bear branches. The expression refers to bachelors who aren't adding branches to the family tree. Now, all of this is rooted in China's one-child policy. Implemented between 1978 and 1980, it was intended to curb the country's overpopulation problem, but the policy had unintended blowback. China now has a massive gender imbalance. By 2020, it's projected that men will outnumber females by at least 30 million, hence Singles Day. From this national turmoil, the unofficial holiday was born at this university. It's a day that was initially meant for single men to party with other single friends. Though, fast forward to 2009, Alibaba CEO Daniel Zhang sees a business opportunity to co-opt the unofficial holiday in an attempt to drum up more online sales. In China, spikes in shopping sales were common in late September before China's National Day, and again in the first 2 months of the year before the Spring Festival. Those two retail polls created a lull in late autumn, which Alibaba hoped to exploit with deep price cuts. And it worked. Seeing the potential of Alibaba's move, most Chinese retailers jumped on board the next year. Now, Singles Day has become the biggest shopping day in the entire world, and it looks like it's just going to get even bigger.